Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Well, here we are, Memorial Day weekend, and I got my traveling done before Memorial Day weekend. Right now, I'm sitting at one of the Gallatin County fishing sites, and there's a few people coming back from the river. I'm not going to tell you which one I'm at, but maybe you can tell by the sound of the cars behind me. None of these is very quiet in the parking lot, but today my recording studio is the front seat of my car because it's been raining off and on and I don't want my equipment to get wet. Well, anyway, like I said, I've been traveling again, and this time I was 12 days on a journey to the east and then to the south. My first night camping was one of those nights the Aurora Borealis danced in the skies above. Did you get to see them? When we arrived back at my house, my heart was broken when I saw what our road association had decided to do with our little road. Have you ever felt like that? Ken Lane talks about that feeling concerning public lands. He titled our episode today, Call of the Blue Crow, and it was produced May 17th, 2024. Here we go.
Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. The waxing crescent moon was especially beautiful last week. The glowing horns of Baal, the Bull King, as he travels the evening sky with such power and glory. Of course, it's not really a bull, it's the moon. Nobody ever thought it was an actual bull, although that's what the experts will tell you. These primitive morons believed an enormous bull was actually in the sky, perfectly camouflaged except for the glow-in-the-dark horns. Nobody ever thought that. Nobody ever believed the constellation Ursa Major was really a gigantic bear floating up there in the northern sky. But it's a good story, the way we learn things. Oh, that dominant group of northern stars? Well, that's the Great Bear. That's the nose, way over there on the right. And those are the legs, three of them anyway. And that's the body going to the left, to the west, and that's the tail, I guess. It's a bear with a long tail. There's a story about that. And then wherever you lived in the northern hemisphere, there was a story. For the Oshkosh in Wisconsin, a place where the people have always enjoyed ice fishing in winter, the story is a dialogue between bear and fox. Bear is hungry, and the fox gets all the fish, and then, just to be mean, fox tells the bear how to fish the ice-covered lake. When the fox says, "Hey, bear, knock a hole in the ice and sit down, and when you get a bite on your long bear tail that bears have," while this story is taking place, "well, there's your fish, all you want." So Bear knocks a hole in the ice and sits there too long with the tail in the cold, cold water, waiting for a bunch of bites to bring in a big catch, and that's how Bear lost its long tail. That story is common to many tribes, many peoples of the Great Lakes, and wherever the winters are especially long and cold. But now that time has passed, the winter time, because it is May, the merry month of May, the time of flowers. And the Mojave, the hedgehog cactus, are blooming, and the creosote are getting their brilliant yellow flowers. And there's always some chia or some mallow. But no vast carpets of wildflowers this year, none that I saw anyway, and I ranged around a little bit this spring. I'm happy with whatever I encountered. But it wasn't enough to get the multitudes out here. With everybody running out of money and gas at $5 plus again, and a general bad feeling about things. Another reason that tourism has dropped off is because the novelty is gone. Especially when so many people come with a meager list of tourist activities that are more or less accomplished in a weekend. And then it seems redundant if you maybe come around a second time. The loop drive through the national park, the long wait at the tourist restaurant, drearily cleaning the vacation rental on hangover Sunday, looking for the recycling bins in the hot, hot sun. Only so many times you can do that, really. Just shuffling along in a crowded circuit, and now there's another grand on the credit card. Where'd the money even go? Dave Foreman wrote an interesting book some years back called Rewilding America. I'm sure I've mentioned it before on the program. The title describes the book just fine, Rewilding America. I agree with the premise completely. Its concepts, still radical 20 years ago when it was first published, have since become mainstream conservation science. Especially the connections part of it all, the network aspect. Wilderness requires connections, wild corridors between immense wilderness ranges with great rings of open space. It's so mainstream that the U.S. Marine Corps, Department of the U.S. Navy, is party to various wilderness connection agreements with government agencies and land conservation groups right here in the Mojave. And while Foreman did not necessarily intend this, one aspect of small towns being surrounded by wilderness, forests and deserts, and great wide vistas of mountain and plain, river and stream, is that the holiday rentals, strictly regulated by vicious warlords cruising around in pickups with mounted machine guns, etc., well, these holiday homes could be put along a section of the wilderness boundary, let's say 25% maximum, in this invented scenario. The homes for full-time residents, along with schools and workplaces and picnic grounds all opening onto the wilderness, would be the vast majority of this civilization-wilderness interface. But that section for the vacation rentals, just imagine how much more interesting it would be to get to your cabin and then just range right outside the back doors into the wild. There are cougars, coyotes, wolves, and brown bear, too. Maybe you come across somebody who twisted their ankle up running from a bear. But now you've got to ferry this injured person back to the village. Now that's fun.
Desert Oracle Radio.
Spotting great herds of blacktail mule deer or pronghorn antelope, seeing the hawks and eagles in the sky above. Hiking out to the creek or the mountains, ever aware that this is a place of wilderness. A place of predators. And prey. So you carry this injured person back to the village. 6 miles on pretty good trails. Everybody brings home a good story. Everybody has a good, healthy adventure. Gets the adrenaline going for a purpose. Running for your life. Running from a bear who wasn't even really interested. You just sort of got in its way there while it was fishing. Then you get the injured to the field hospital before a dark night falls over all. Recently on this program, I've told some stories about trees, especially those groves of big, majestic trees like the Mariposa Grove, and about some of the characters who've championed these places against a general attitude of just cut it all down, there's plenty more. The attitude that just about wiped out the California tule elk down to a single breeding pair in 1874. Francis Drake, 3 centuries earlier, reported an infinite number of very large and fat deer, which there we saw by thousands, as we supposed, in a herd. That was when he landed in today's Marin County in 1579. At Drake's Bay, of all places, what are the chances? The passenger pigeon, which once flocked so densely over American skies that the sun was blotted out. The glorious bison, slaughtered to the edge of extinction in a few years. The 1870s, that notorious decade, that holocaust of American wildlife. There were some 8 million bison on the North American plains, and suddenly there were 325 remaining anywhere. During those same dark years, the settlers' replacement for bison, European cattle, quickly transformed most of the Southwest's lush grasslands to barren, rocky ground, good for little more than low brush and Russian thistle. West Texas is a particularly brutal example of what a few decades of cattle grazing can do to America's once thriving landscape of prairie, of grasslands, of river valleys, of bison, wolves, and bear. Rich wetlands spilling out from every river bend, shaded by cottonwoods. Thanks to the beavers for that. Millions of beavers everywhere in the West. One reason we talk a lot about the trees is because the classic Western landscape is the beautiful pinyon and juniper landscape. The high country above the flatlands so quickly fouled by the ranchers. The high country, with its iconic pinyon pines and rocky outcroppings. One of the baffling things we hear about decade after decade is the U.S. Bureau of Land Management's deliberate destruction of old wild woodlands for one idiotic scheme after another. Bulldoze whole forests, drag them down with monstrous chains. Turn it all into weed lots, feed lots, dead zones, suitable for a couple of sad old range cattle. Too weak and sickly to attract any alien mutilators. They destroy these woodlands as they destroy the Blue Crow. The majestic Blue Crow, today better known by the more boring name Binion Jay. The Blue Crow is a social bird and an industrious bird in great flocks moving between their favorite pinyon forest. Hundreds and even thousands of these charming and chattering birds once kept people company in such wild places. But in the past 50 years, the number of pinyon jays has collapsed by 78%. The pinyon jay is the steward of the pinyon forest for which the forest feeds and houses this crucial blue crow. Of the thousands of pinyon nuts the blue crow puts away for the winter, usually working with its mate and both returning to the spot throughout the year to store or collect, the few pine nuts left behind grow into new pinyons, expanding the reach of the woodland. More woodland means more wildlife. More carbon-breathing conifers, more precious western water stored in the ground, more wildlife corridors that connect mule deer and desert bighorn, and mountain lions along mountain and valley to vast zones of wilderness. The single-leaf pinyon is Nevada's state tree, which is not always a great honor, as the bear on the California flag could tell you if it was still around. But the last grizzly, the last California golden bear, as it's known on the state flag, was seen in 1924, 100 years ago, what is now Sequoia National Park. The last one a hunter took down was 2 years prior, in 1922. In 1848, the year before the California Gold Rush, there were an estimated 10,000 grizzlies in California. Maybe this time we can do a little better. This is from an Associated Press article in August of 2023. Wildlife managers agreed to review the plight of pinyon jay. Albuquerque. U.S. wildlife managers announced on August 16 that they will investigate whether a bird that is inextricably linked to the pinyon and juniper forests that span the western United States warrants protection under the Endangered Species Act. The pinyon jay's numbers have declined over the last half century as persistent drought, more severe wildfires, and other effects of climate change have intensified, leaving the birds with less food and fewer nesting options as more trees die or are removed. End quote. Why is the government removing forest? Removing woodlands? Do they all have pine borers in the brain? So look, if you want to help out our friends, the pinyon jays, the blue crows, you can contact U.S. Fish and Wildlife, or better yet, take a look at the Pinyon Juniper Alliance and look at the Take Action page. They've got contact information for the various bureaucrats, the state offices of the federal agencies, a sample letter you can adjust to your taste before sending off, etc. But the best way, as always, is to make use of these places. Forget the crowded national parks in peak season. Take your tent and your mountain bicycles and your ice chest full of steaks and beer to the federal lands outside those famed NPS boundaries. You'll have a lot more fun, for one thing. Who goes camping with the intent of sharing a pit toilet with 28 parking spaces full of loud strangers? Not me. Make use of places and raise hell when you see what the government bureaucrats are doing to these lands. New lithium mine surveyed in your favorite out-of-the-way wild place? Well, it's up to you to safely remove all survey markers and other evidence of the destroyers of Earth. Slim Jim wrappers, GPS tags, etc. Because otherwise somebody might trip over that junk, causing an injury. Safety first. I just love the Pinyon Jays myself. I love the flock at the end of Black Rock Canyon that I've been visiting for 15 years now. I love the flock up at the Sacred Grove I've been spending time with this past decade. Just anywhere I see or hear Pinyon Jays. They've got that special corvid charm, that weirdness we easily recognize and respond to. But unlike the more famous corvids, the ravens and the crows and the other jaybirds, Pinyon Jays are decreasing along with their iconic range. The wild American West, threatened most by the agency tasked with protecting it. Forest clearing, biofuels, all this jive. All these schemes and scams, all this payback. Remember, too, if they bulldoze all the wild public land around you for whatever scheme, Bitcoin, solar farm, lithium mine in an ancient river, biofuels for Denmark. They are also making the remaining places of wild beauty into reservation-only ticketed attractions at the end of long traffic jams. Like what has become of Yosemite in Yellowstone. And you are no longer a free soul on the wild land like you are in much of the Southwest with its wild public-owned lands. You are a number, a license plate number read by an AI reader mounted at the ticket booth. A data point for the hospitality corporation that has the food service contracts for that particular unit of the NPS. Take a look at that ticket booth ahead of you. 100 cars ahead of you, all fading into the exhaust fume mirage. That's what's called a choke point. Beware. Oh, and be aware that you are listening to Soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. But here on Desert Oracle Radio, with me, your host, Ken Lang. You ever wonder why this AI stuff, which is universally known to be 90% useless, is getting such a big, consistent push in 2024? Because something has always got to be pushed on the suckers. When the previous somethings run out of steam, like the world population or the market for $100,000 electric cars, or whatever the hell the metaverse was supposed to be, well, then all the hype gets redirected into whatever else can justify massive corporate expenditures. AI, neither artificial nor intelligent, is just an excuse for a dramatic increase in energy production to produce the expensive video game cards that run the shoddy, nonsensical AI software, to transport these video game cards to computer server warehouses around the world, and especially to run the server farms at full capacity day and night to prevent anyone from ever getting a correct answer again when they ask their phone how to cook a hot dog. That's AI. Every wrong thing you've ever encountered on the internet, but without the human sorted index that would occasionally show you the correct information after a full screen of ads. AI cannot even think at the level of a very basic idiot on Reddit, intentionally typing nonsense to troll the other idiots. All that AI can do is sift through all of that garbage and spit out utterly wrong results all day and all night forever until the last human dies of annoyance and climate change. That's if we don't do anything about it, I mean. Remember, they will end the world to drag out the last years of the obscenely named information economy. They will end the world. And they will believe until the end that somehow they will escape the catastrophe. That somehow they will both survive and thrive. Never before has it been so crucial to fight the machines and the psychopaths who fund them. And they know it. Why do you think they've made masking illegal now, when 3 years ago you weren't allowed in a Burger King without your entire face covered in a mask? The main job of AI is already in deployment, and it is for global facial recognition. When you are in an urban or suburban environment, the boast is that you can't move 10 feet without being scanned, photographed, cataloged, matched up with phone data and car computer data and the other dozen signs of every mundane action you take in public. And yet, the junk is so fragile, so easily rendered useless. There's a social media account of nothing but unsecured surveillance cameras all over the world. Scroll through a few and you'll see some very close to you and you'll see what is being watched. Lots of billboards for local law firms. Laundromats where poor people try to keep an eye on their kid while they do 3 loads of laundry after a long day's work doing other people's laundry. Parking lots, storage rooms. You can just put a sticker over the lens, unplug the connector, snip the wires. There are so many ways to take its artificial vision, to blind it, to blind them, the great enemy ever watching. Remember the congressional lady who got in trouble for feeling up her date in a theater? Lots of people found that very funny, enjoyed shaming the woman, who was already shameless and void of all morality due to being employed as a congressperson. But nowhere did I see or hear anyone say, "Isn't that kind of creepy? The night vision cameras watching everybody in a theater?" I remember when the whole idea of going to a theater was a chance to feel up your date in the dark. We'd go see anything for the privacy. From Amboy to Isaacs across the great Mojave Wilderness, this has been Desert Oracle Radio. Friends, if you've been looking for some back issues or a signed hardcover of the Desert Oracle book or some of our handsome vinyl Desert Oracle stickers, I've got some stuff on the DesertOracle.com online store. it'd be nice if I got enough money together to print the next issue, issue number 11. Thanks for listening, and good night from the Voice of the Desert.
Well, we are at the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio. Well, I got to see that crescent moon that he talks about at the start of our episode today, just as it set, orange and low, from a small South Dakota lake. The birds were busy with territorial calls there, just like they are here, even with the spring snow. Well, I didn't know the pinyon jay is also called the blue crow. I wondered about this bird in Montana and found an article in the Montana Field Guide, a wonderful online resource for our state. So, I'm just going to look at some of these little statements from that website here for you. It is considered a species of concern in Montana, and it is a native species. Let's see. It says, pinyon jays are small, medium, and crestless, about 26 to 29 centimeters in total length. The bill is more pointed and the tail shorter than in other jays. Adult plumage is entirely dull blue except the chin, throat, and breast region, streaked whitish, and inner webs of primaries black. Sexes are alike in appearance, except the crown is slightly deeper blue in males, and the female bill is slightly longer. So, as I said, it's a species of concern. That means it's not threatened yet, and it's not endangered yet, but it has really been reduced in its numbers that are observed. And it says the loss of ponderosa pine woodlands probably is the greatest threat to pinyon jays in Montana. What I didn't know is that they are here year-round. The food habits of pinyon jays is that they are generally omnivorous, with pine seeds forming an important component of the diet. Juniper berries, wild fruits, agricultural grains, and animal matter such as arthropods, lizards, snakes, nestling birds, small mammals are also eaten. Pinyon jays are adapted in many ways for the harvest, transport, storage, retrieval, and use of pine seeds, especially those of pinyon pines. Pine seeds are cached in thick litter and needle layers covering the ground. And, you know, we have another jay species, the Clark's Nutcracker, that also depends on pine seeds, but I think they depend on a different kind, the whitebark pine. They are extremely social and rarely observed individually except during eruptions. Helpers have been reported tending to nests of their parents in Arizona, but social organization has not been studied in Montana. Any citizen scientists out there? Maybe this would be a good project. So home ranges of flocks in Arizona were up to 4.8 by 4.8 miles. When cone crops are spotty, birds may leave the home range and wander much greater distances in search of cones. Nests and eggs are depredated by snakes, birds, squirrels. Raptorial birds take fledglings and adults. Data indicate annual declines in numbers by 2.3% in Montana and 4.3% survey-wide from 1980 through 2007. Montana CBC data for the same period show a modest increase in numbers seen per party hour until 1988, followed by an abrupt and then modest decline back to 1980 levels, with a striking spike in 1997. No management activities specific to pinyon jays are currently occurring in Montana. Destruction of pinyon juniper woodlands is a major factor in the widespread decline of pinyon jays south of Montana. In addition, fire suppression has resulted in accumulation of fuels and led to increasingly severe fires in ponderosa pine stands. Loss of ponderosa pine woodlands probably is the greatest threat to pinyon jays in Montana, and management activities promoting the health of ponderosa pine will benefit pinyon jays. I think that's about it that I want to read to you today, but it's good to be aware of how our civilization is impacting the birds, the animals, the plants around us. And that led me to look at a little more online. I'll tell you about that in a minute. So, again, I turned to the Montana Field Guide online. I wanted to know about the big picture of species at risk in our state. Well, currently, Montana has 4 critters listed as threatened. They are the bull trout, which is found in the Clark Fork and the Flathead drainages of western Montana, and their slowly declining trend has led to their designation as a threatened species. Bull trout are a sensitive species that do not tolerate high sediment levels in their spawning streams. Sediment can suffocate the developing embryos before they hatch. The second one on the list is the Canada lynx. In early 2000, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service listed the Canada lynx as threatened under the Federal Endangered Species Act. The listing covers 16 states, including Montana, as a federally threatened species. Taking a lynx by trapping or shooting is prohibited. The grizzly bear. Currently, south of Canada, there are 6 grizzly bear subpopulations in Wyoming, Washington, Idaho, and Montana, 4 of which are partially or all in Montana, along the Northern Continental Divide, Greater Yellowstone, the Cabinet Yak, and the Bitterroot areas. So grizzlies are difficult to survey, but in 2021, it is believed there are roughly 1,100 grizzly bears in the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem in Montana, 1,000 bears in the Yellowstone ecosystem in Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho, 100 bears in the Selkirk ecosystem in Idaho, Washington, and British Columbia, and 50 bears in the Cabinet Yak ecosystem in Montana and Idaho. And finally, the piping plover, a 2-ounce shorebird of open beaches, alkali flats, and sandy areas, breeds along the Atlantic coast from southern Canada to North Carolina, along major rivers and wetlands in the northern Great Plains, from southern Saskatchewan and Manitoba through Nebraska, and along portions of the western Great Lakes. Did I mention that there's also a railroad that goes just past this fishing access place? Well, there is. Okay, I'm going to continue with endangered species in Montana. And some of these might be nationally, I don't know. Number one is the black-footed ferret. 29 years after listing, this 2-pound weasel remains the rarest mammal in North America. Introduced diseases and a century of prairie dog control have brought it to the brink of extinction. With the death of the last of 9 captive ferrets at Patuxent Wildlife Research Center in 1978, most people feared the species had become extinct. But I believe they are at least trying to bring them back. Next up, we have the least tern. The interior population of least tern was listed as endangered in 1985. Populations along the east and west coasts are not endangered. The interior population, which once inhabited all of the major river systems in the middle of the country, evolved to take advantage of constantly changing rivers. And then the northern long-eared bat. The northern long-eared bat is one of Montana's 15 bat species. Populations across North America have suffered declines greater than 90% due to impacts from white nose syndrome, a disease caused by a cold-adapted fungus that primarily affects hibernating bats. This species was listed as threatened under the ESA in 2015 and as endangered in 2023. Next, we have the pallid sturgeon. The pallid sturgeon is the largest of 2 sturgeons historically found in the upper Missouri River. The other is the more common shovel-nosed sturgeon. The pallid sturgeon was not recognized as a species until 1905, and that classification is still being debated. 3 genetic studies conducted to assess the relationship of the 2 species have been inconclusive. And then the white sturgeon. The Kootenai River white sturgeon was listed as endangered in 1994. This population had been declining for at least 40 years, and natural reproduction has been insignificant since 1974. Kootenai sturgeon began declining in the 1950s and 60s as water quality deteriorated due to pollution. And then the whooping crane. The world whooping crane population now stands at 319, the highest level of the century. Last summer, 47 pairs nested in and around Wood Buffalo National Park in the Northwest Territories and adjacent Alberta. This population of 190 whoopers, the only self-sustaining wild population, winters at Arkansas National Wildlife Refuge on the Texas coast. There is also a listing for species of concern. This report is updated by a joint committee composed of biologists from the Montana Natural Heritage Program and the Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks as new status information becomes available for individual species. Montana species of concern are native animals breeding in the state that are considered to be at risk due to declining population trends, threats to their habitats, and/or restricted distribution. And finally, I wanted to tell you that Montana has 226 species of concern, 93 potential species of concern, and 62 special status species. Well, I don't know about you, but all this is enough to cause me alarm, if not downright depression. And I haven't even gone into the plant report. There are 451 plant species of concern alone. And what bothers me, it's the losses, and it's the reasons for the losses. It's also about the habitat loss, which often are the very sort of areas we love so much in Montana. But, gentle listeners, each of us can do something. Raise awareness, yes, and support conservation efforts, yes. And there are numerous groups out there to join and volunteer with. And Ken's words today included a heads up to all of us. I agree with him. We should go out to and pay attention to our public lands. You might read that as BLM lands or wilderness study areas or maybe even some county areas. And keep an eye on what certain agencies are doing out there and what they're not doing. Do you know where our BLM lands are in Montana? How can you find out? Well, I searched for Montana Public Lands Map on mt.gov. It's capital M, capital T, .gov. And I found a resource from the Montana State Library. You can search for public and private land ownership maps, and then you fill in the location you're looking for, such as Bozeman, Montana, or Livingston, Montana, and it'll come up with a quadrangle map, and the BLM lands are in yellow, and there are other sorts of management areas also listed on those maps. Unfortunately, some areas have no name designation, but I think you'd at least, if you went there to one of those areas, you'd at least see a BLM sign or whatever kind of management the place is under. BLM.org offers information, but for me it was sort of a rabbit hole trying to find a simple map. Maybe their offices in Missoula or Billings have an idea. You could try your hiking apps. And I think the Bozeman Public Library offers quadrangle maps you could capture in a photo. So what's your experience? Do you have some insights? Is my brain just still on travel mode? I'd love to have your help. Please call or text me if you have any insights at 406-404-6246. Ooh, the rain is coming down, and I am so glad I'm in my car. I'm keeping dry. Well, my thanks to Ken Lane for his continuing work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to Cornell All About Birds for the Pinyon Jay sounds. Thanks to Beloved Mountain for setting the mood in the opening and closing sounds today. You gotta wait for it. Thank you, Gallatin Valley, and everyone for listening. You can leave me a message or text about anything on your mind. That number again is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. Till next week, stay well and sweet dreams. And in closing, I want to suggest we have less bronze statues and more living, thriving creatures. Find your star-filled skies. Do something to protect and preserve a place you love. Make your surveillance of public lands plans, whatever they are. I know it's not summer just yet, but I'm yearning for warmer temperatures, trying to keep my spirits up, even with every new snowfall. So let's have Chuck Prophet take us out with Summertime Thing.
Sun's burning down on the pavement. Money in the bank, I ain't gonna save it. Jenna come by, hope she makes it. Jenna coming by, I sure hope she makes it. It's a summertime thing. Summertime thing. There's a party next door that sounds like it's cooking. I poked my head over the wall, took a look in. Was a five-piece band, they was really rocking. Oh, looked like some kind of family reunion. Hey, it's a summertime thing. Summer heat's got me feeling lazy. Air is warm and the sky's hazy. People getting down, getting crazy. Oh, people getting down, it's people getting crazy. Hey, hey, it's a summertime thing. Summertime thing. Dad for the keys of the Honda. And can your sister come along? How could she not wanna? I put the Beach Boys on, wanna hear him and Rounder. Oh, put the Beach Boys on, wanna hear him and Rounder.
Good on you. Oh, you have it going now?
Mm-hmm.
I'm all done. The show's over.
Oh, well. That happens.